This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can always listen on your radio dial, 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But you can stay up to date with everything happening at 92.9 FM ESPN by downloading the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. All you have to do is go and download the Odyssey app in your app store. Dennis Fulsch, producer of the program for us, glad that he is indeed with us. My company, as he is on Tuesdays and Fridays, is, of course, the one, the only, Tim Murray, host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. Also, you got VSiN's College Football Betting Tailgate Show tomorrow, each and every Saturday, College Football Saturday, starting 9 a.m. Central Time. Of course, the host of VSiN Primetime as well on Twitter, on X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Hello, hello. Quite the sports evening, if you like, drama on both the football and baseball front. So that was enjoyable if you are a sports fan. If you do a radio show on a daily basis in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, not so enjoyable because that was as brutal as it comes. But that's the nature of the beast in baseball, man.
October's the best month, right? For sports fans?
Yes, I would say so. November's pretty awesome. I like November a lot because you got college hoops now involved. I'm a big college hoop guy, and you get, you know, around Thanksgiving, you've got all of those unique non-conference showdowns, and you've got big-time college football games. You've got cold weather, but there is just something about playoff baseball. And, you know, I have lived the glory. I have lived the pain as a Washington National fan. Now I'm just living the my team sucks life, which is the least fun of it all. You know, it's funny because, you know, once again, I do this show up in Milwaukee, and, you know, they're just in dread. They're gutted, man. It was 2-0 in the ninth, and you've got the best closer in the game coming out, and you lose 4-2. There's something about being a sports fan where you think about these postseason debacles and losses and how painful and gutting they are, but I'd rather do that than just have my team be irrelevant, if that makes sense.
I would say the problem for me right now is my team's boring. Like the Cardinals are just boring, and they're just like the definition of mediocre.
Yeah,
real path either. Like needing a teardown.
Like, so I used to have this argument, and it was more a bit from my former co-host of mine. You know, this was before the Nationals won the World Series in 2019, before the Capitals won the Stanley Cup in 2018, And he said, "Oh man, you got to keep all these teams in the friend zone." And I scolded him. I'm like, "What are you talking about? Like, you're full of crap because as soon as your team becomes good, you're gonna get fully invested." And his whole point was like, "Oh, you know, you don't want to get let down." I'm like, "That's the point of being a fan. Like, the point of being a fan is heart-wrenching losses, but it's the nature of the beast, man. Like, it sucks for Milwaukee Brewer fans, no doubt, but think about Met fans today."
Like, well, I think that was what was fascinating about yesterday. It really was kind of like the unstoppable force versus the immovable object, because those are two fan bases that both just think they're going to have the most heartbreaking type losses. I think the thing that I've struggled with, though, is we're kind of crafting that the Mets are an underdog. They have the highest payroll in baseball. Like, I get that the start and everything and some of the injuries, but it's like we're acting as if like this is like the A's doing this.
Yes, no doubt. Like, they're the pesky underdogs.
Right.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, Francisco Lindor and all of these guys, they've got what? Is Steve Cohen the richest owner in baseball? He might be.
Is he the richest owner in sports?
He might be. I mean, he might be just the flat-out richest owner. So, yeah, this is not – let's not endear ourselves with the Mets. But, I mean, think about the range of emotions from Wednesday night. The Mets are up, what, 3-2, 4-3, whatever it was, in the eighth. They give up
I think it was 3-2.
Yeah, Churio tied it up with a homer, and then they hit the pinch hit homer to center, two-run shot. And then it's 2-0. The place is on fire. The Mets can't do anything. Pete Alonso drops a pop-up in foul territory, and Met fans, in typical Met fashion, are losing their minds and saying, "Don't even come back to New York," you know? And then he comes up off of a guy who had given up one home run all year. A guy who had given up three runs all year. And he hits a three-run shot to right field.
Oppo like taco, baby.
Like, dude, this is incredible, man. Like, it is. That's the beauty of baseball. Like, I'll give you a quick story. I know it's a Football Friday. But in 2012, it was the first year the Nationals had made the playoffs. And they were playing the St. Louis Cardinals. And they lost game three in brutal. Like, they got destroyed by the Cardinals. And there was actually a picture of me and my brother that got shown on MLB Network when they were looking for sad crowd shots.
The CBS special, as I refer to it.
Yeah. So I should find you that picture. I'll send you that picture, because there's a picture of me and my brother in the sad fan shots. Then in game four, the Nats hit a walk-off homer with Jason Worth. And game five, I go to it. I'm out in left field, and the Nats are up 6-0 in the third inning. And then slowly but surely, your Cardinals chip away.
I was going to say, this is fun for me. Keep going.
6-4, 6-5 in the top of the eighth. Nats score a run, bottom of the eighth. Drew Storen comes in out of the bullpen. 4 runs in the top of the ninth. And you walk out of that stadium.
What just happened?
You walk out of that stadium, and you're like, what happened? Like, we were going, and then your mind starts to run. Like, my mind last night, as I was sitting in studio watching this game, because I, you know, do some stuff in Milwaukee, I'm like, maybe I go to an NLDS game. Like, should I go to Milwaukee and see one of these games?
I hear it's currently on a Raid Stadium. I've only driven by it. It's pretty
cool. Yeah, it's cool.
I think I will stump
tailgate scenes neat. Milwaukee, by the way.
I will stump for awesome Milwaukee. City. I think it is criminally underrated as a city.
It's a mini Chicago.
Yeah.
It's mini Chicago.
Great food.
Great bars. Yeah. On the water. Very cool city. Very underrated city. But yeah. And that's what sports are about, man. Like, and then, you know, I don't know. It just makes whenever your team can win a championship or win a big game, that's why you got to cherish it. Like Billy Madison, you know? Telling the kid to cherish elementary school. Like, cherish your championships. Because in 2019, when the Nats made the magical run, which started with a wild card victory against the Brewers coming from behind in the eighth inning, it makes it that much better. But, man, it's that's what's so awesome about sports. And And we keep it rolling, man. It's just, yeah, it's so great. That's what I love about doing what we do. And I just, when you get to enjoy the highs and lows of your team winning, it is, it's pretty wild.
There's also, I get it, every postseason you can kind of make a claim for, except honestly, I would argue against the NBA postseason, because it feels like now more than ever, we just have blowouts. Like, we have seven-game series.
Forever.
We have seven-game series that, like, one game was close. It takes entirely too long.
And think about it, you know, from a baseball versus basketball standpoint, hockey to an extent, but more so basketball, right? Where you've got the longest season in baseball in sports is baseball, right? Starts in late March, ends in late September, early October, and just like that, you're eliminated from the playoffs. Like,
yeah, you've been done in like 27 hours.
3 days.
Yeah. No, 27 hours, dude.
2 days, you're done. It's like, wait, what? We won that division. The Houston Astros. Not that I feel bad for
the Astros.
Astros. Like, you were terrible to start the year. You scratch, you claw, you get your way back, you win the center of the West, and you're done in two games. Thanks for playing 162, winning your division. Peace out. It happened so fast.
Well, and then not only does it happen so fast, the nature of playoff baseball games is excruciating. Because to me, it's like, yes, in the NFL, your team can be done in 3 hours, but like, when your team is in the NFL playoffs, you blink and it's like the third quarter. The game just like in every, like there's, it moves so much quicker. The thing about being a baseball fan is like, every, like, it feels like you're just getting waterboarded for 3 hours. You know what I mean? Like, every time somebody gets on base and doesn't score, you're just like, it's over. It's over. I mean, like, think about with the Orioles the other night. Bases loaded. Yes, they got the one run, but then they get the bases loaded, nobody out. You have to know when you don't score there, you're like, we are done.
I mean, did any Met fan, because look, Met fans, Yankee fans, New Yorkers, very even keel, right?
Never
get too low. There is not a Met fan in this damn world that thought they were going to win that game yesterday.
Most Met fans didn't think they were. They thought they were going to lose both to the Braves the other day.
And that was another crazy game. Like, playoff baseball.
That's the thing about the Mets that I find myself enjoying. Like, I'm not gonna parade that they're underdogs, but what I like about them is they'll actually like hit the baseball. Like, everything's not drop and drive. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just swing for the fence. Like, they've had incredibly timely hitting. They run the bases. Like, they do actually play a fairly exciting brand of baseball.
Got Jesse Winker yelling at people, slamming his helmet as he scores yesterday.
Hair looked great, too.
People probably don't like him in Milwaukee right now, but I kind of like Jesse Winker. Baseball needs stuff like that. I'm so sick and tired of the unwritten rules, and we've moved past them. Like, the best baseball, I'll be honest, man, some of the best baseball, most enjoyable baseball to watch is watching Latin American teams in the World Baseball Classic.
They have flair.
They're having fun. They're dancing. They're celebrating homers. And my always point with baseball, too, not to go down this rabbit hole, but like, my point about baseball, and I feel like it's gotten a little better than what it used to be, where it was just like curmudgeons all the time, is, you know how hard it is to hit a freaking home run? It's the hardest thing in sports. To hit a baseball, like the fact that yesterday, I don't know if you saw the video that John Boy put out about Devin Williams maybe tipping his pitches a little bit to Pete Alonso. And I was doing the morning show this morning, and they're like, you don't really believe that. I'm like, yeah, these dudes are crazy. Like, these athletes, like, they don't look like primo athletes, but their hand-eye coordination and their ability to pick up on things, it's insane. And he was just, what John Boy pointed out about Devin Williams on the home run to Alonso was that his hand was going a little bit deeper in his glove. His glove angle was just slightly tilted up. And these dudes pick up on that stuff, man. It's crazy how the minute thing that they can pick up on. And Devin Williams could tell 99.99999% of the human population, I'm throwing a change up, and you'd be like, cool, and you'd miss.
No, but I mean,
Pete Alonso is like, okay, I think he's throwing a changeup based off of the tilt of his glove, and he hits it to right field for a homer.
No, I mean, that's what I've always struggled with. What's more unfair, major league hitters or major league pitchers? Because then, like, when you go and you watch, like, Pitching Ninja, and you look at, like, what they can do with a baseball, it's like, how the hell do you hit that?
More unfair.
And then you see, like, when you see, like, a guy that can really hit, it's like, how do you get this guy out?
Well, it's like, I mean, I know Bonds had some enhancements, obviously.
I don't care. I saw him in person when he was like peak roided out.
Dude.
It was a Reds Giants.
Couldn't get that guy out.
He saw one pitch the entire weekend and he hit it into the river.
That dude, because here's the thing. I could take steroids right now and I would still suck at baseball.
Well, not
Barry Bonds was a Hall of Famer. And then he took steroids and became a super Hall of Famer.
Well, the stat that was going around this weekend, Barry Bonds himself has more intentional walks than the entire Rays history of the organization.
That's just stupid.
One player.
You just didn't throw to him. And anytime you threw to him...
He got intentionally walked when the bases were loaded.
Anytime you threw to him, he made you pay. But, I mean, I hope, you know, and here's the issue, though, right? I'm all geeked out. I loved watching last night. I will almost guarantee you on Saturday, I probably will watch under 10 minutes worth of baseball.
No, because I myself am a baseball guy. Like, my dad still coaches, like, elite travel baseball. Like, it's not like he has a kid or anything on the team. Like, that's what he does. Like, it's like, oh boy. I mean, I guess whatever makes you happy, Dad. But, like, I both my brothers played college baseball. Like, I come from this world, but I'm the exact same thing. It's like, baseball will basically have to be there from Monday through Friday.
Yeah. And, like, I'll have it on during the week, but there's no way. There's no way. I would rather watch.
And it's not even a hardo thing. It's just like there's a limited buffet of football.
I had a buddy of mine text me back in 2014, and the Nats were playing a middle of the day DS game against the Giants, and I did not have a multi television setup at the time. It was a decade ago. Forgive me. But he texted
some,
me. Like,
some of us have had it since 04.
I know. I needed to be better. I had it back in the day in my parents' basement with two tube TVs put on top of each other. You know, we had the PS2 on the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
It's the cable on the top. Baseball tonight. Ba, 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 ba,
ba, ba. Hit the organs, baby.
But my buddy texted me. He was like, man, are you watching this? I'm like, no, Notre Dame's on, man. What are you talking about? He's like, what? It's a regular season game. I'm like, I don't care.
I only get 12 of these.
Yeah. I only get 12 of these, and as much as I love my Nats, they ain't number one on the pecking order. But, yeah, I mean, look, I think for baseball, we've got some pretty interesting series, right?
Yeah.
You know, I would have loved to see the Brewers move on, but to be honest, the fact you've got Mets-Phillies, that's pretty great. The fact that you've got, you know, the top two players in the American League going head-to-head in Kansas City at New York with Aaron Judge and Witt on Kansas City. Awesome. And then San Diego and L.A. just hate each other.
The I-5
series. That's going to be fantastic. Like, that is the series number one on my list is San Diego and the Dodgers.
One of my fraternity brothers was at the game, and he has two
kids under the age of two. And in our group chat, one of my buddies goes, how are you at the game? Because he went to both of them. And he was like, I told my wife, my boys need me. The Padres need him.
If the Padres make a deep run.
Well, the great thing is, if the Padres win, we're going to have to listen to Dodgers fans talk about how unfair the playoffs are again. That'll be awesome.
So have I told you this story? And So my producer for VSiN is a Dodger fan, and I should find when he did send it to us, but in like either July or August, he just sends out a text to me and my co-host, "Dodgers are in shambles." And I'm like, bro, you're talking to a national fan and we haven't done anything in 5 years. And my co-host is an Angel fan.
God, they're a poor soul.
Yeah.
They're just broken.
Like you've got that. You've got Ohtani now. And you're telling us you're in shambles when you just won the division for, what, the 10th time in 11 years? I get it. You only won one World Series in this stretch, and it was the COVID year.
It was
year.
A COVID series.
But still, man, like, Dodger fans, let's chill ourselves there. But our pitching staff is not great. Okay. You still have Jack Flaherty going in Game 2, and I'm sorry that Walker Buehler's not as good as he once was, but, you know...
You have a plus 156 run differential.
Stuff happens. You also have Shohei Ohtani having like the greatest offensive season in the history of the sport. And
he's
Mookie
been
Betts
so great that we don't even
Freddie Freeman.
Well, it's like Shohei's so good we can't even like understand 50 home runs, 50 stolen bases. Like you hear the 50-50 and it's like that doesn't even put into context. It's like what we've never even had anyone that did 30 and 30, right?
No, we've had 40-40s before. We've never had 50-50.
Yeah, it's just insane.
Yeah, this is, it should be fun, and I can't wait to watch on Monday.
Yes, I can't wait to watch Monday either. So I think that's kind of the other thing that's interesting. Also, shout out to you.
How about my boy Primetime Kirk, baby? Woohoo!
I know nobody
509, baby.
I know nobody cares. Like nobody cares about anyone else's fantasy team or anybody else's lost bets. But could you humor me for like 30 seconds? So
did you have Falcons?
Were you keeping up with?
Oh, did you have Bucks? I mean,
yeah. Hang in there. Were you keeping up with our boys, Texas State?
They put it on them. Yeah, they won.
So I wanted to just lay the number. But my gambling buddy also wanted to take the over because he's like, every Texas State game has like gotten into the 60s. And he's like, they don't play any defense. And he goes, and they'll score, and their pace is going to be fine.
What'd you do?
55 points with 14 minutes left in the game. I need a field goal. I need any score. 14 minutes scoreless. And then...
Did you lay it too?
So I laid it. I went parlay it, did you? No, I laid it, but I went split spill there. Okay. But then another gambling buddy came up with this. We need the primetime under, and we needed the under because Torbert, the official, like he's an unders machine. Both defenses.
The under was dead.
It was dead in the first quarter.
It was over. Like the first two drives, man, you should just live bet the over because that thing was done.
Some people will panic. Like you always have to remember in the NFL, that first script, everyone's pretty good. Like I think Kirk is like an all-time great at the opening script. So at first I'm like, okay, let's see how it settles. Let's see how it settles after that. And it's like when Koo misses a field goal, but you could just see like...
Misses back-to-back.
Yeah, like, but you could just tell neither defense had any shot of stopping the other's offense. And so you just know that that's a dead dog loser. And then I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, all right, I'm going to let Atlanta get on top, and then I'm going to go take the Bucks live to win. And so I ended up getting like Bucks minus 2.5 for like plus 160, like 170, something like that. And I mean, you always know in the NFL, it's the Greyjoys. Like, what's dead may never die. But that was an all-timer. Like, you know what I mean?
When the Falcons got the ball back and they needed to just kick a field goal, I kind of knew we were going.
Oh, I don't even know why we played. I don't even know why we played overtime. Like they should have just moved. Like they should have declared the Falcons the winner. Like, and it's just so excruciating. Also. When you have to watch the coin toss, and it's like, you know, you hear Baker, and that's the other thing. Were you a heads or a tails guy?
I'm a heads guy.
Okay, I am too. But there's nothing worse than when you call heads and lose.
Tails never fails.
Right. So Baker does the move. Like, you know, it's the same thing when Josh Allen lost the classic to Mahomes. The only mistake Josh made that night was he called tails. Like, it should have been heads. And he just, like, I have no idea why we even played overtime. And that tackling on that last play, that was like we were watching Sam Houston State and UTEP. That was CUSA level tackling.
Oh yeah, that was a good one by me. I mean, I love my situational spots, and I don't think you can get a better one than what we saw last night. The problem is, as Matt Eumanns, who is my co-host for the podcast, likes to tell me, don't expect bad teams to do good things.
Yeah,
and that's what I asked UTEP to do, and boy, we don't have to spend too much time on that. That should have been worse.
Oh no, no! You got gifted that touchdown, the defensive score, and I was like, oh, maybe, like, you know, maybe that's something that can help you. And it's like, oh no, no, that's no chance. But like, that same problem is North Carolina going to be on your card? But like, they were that number screams Carolina to me. But it's like, I just can't do it anymore. Like, sometimes North Carolina is one of those teams that you just kind of have to swear off.
Yeah, I bet them last week. I was able to get to the window, thankfully, on them covering, but they might be quit watch.
And it's like, you just can't take them. And I think that's what I think is interesting about tomorrow. On paper.
Oh, tomorrow's going to be. Go ahead, because I got a theory on tomorrow.
Well, I was saying, I think tomorrow on paper, it looks like, you know, it's a lot like your kids. Like, you're going to have to work really hard to love it. You know what I mean? Like, and everybody else may not love it. But these are always the Saturdays, just from, like, anecdotally, these are the Saturdays when you wake up and you're like, okay, that was awesome. It's like when you're expecting absolutely nothing.
Tomorrow we have 8 top 15 teams on the road. And I know everybody is saying, rightfully so, next week is loaded. Loaded. Maybe one of the best weekends.
I mean, next week is the week that we've been looking forward to since someone this summer figured out what the schedule was going to be on October the 12th.
Yeah, like, it is a awesome, awesome slate. But I'm just telling you, man, these are the weekends. If history has told us anything, these are the weekends that weird things happen. I don't know if Vanderbilt can beat Alabama. I don't think they can. But is that game going to be a little bit more excruciating than they think? Is Tennessee going to Woo Pig Suey, night game? They've looked like an unstoppable force.
Could be Pittman's last stand.
Yeah, could they be in a little bit of trouble? Do we get neck brace Bobby to, you know, dial up some big time plays? You know, USC, weird scheduling spot where they've gone Michigan, back home, back to Minnesota. Next week they got Penn State, Ohio State. Are they peeking ahead? Does Iowa muck it up? Look, maybe it's wishful thinking. Maybe it's the hopeless romantic in me. But tomorrow, man, don't count it out. I saw a buddy of mine put out a video on social. Ah, it's a sleepy Saturday. Only one game between ranked teams. I'm like, nah, man. Tomorrow, I've got a feeling. I've got a feeling we're going to have some good ones. I'm hopeful.
Well, we also have some of my favorite games. My favorite games are when you really, like, have both coaches need the win. Those types of days, like, you know what I mean? Like, where it's a borderline anxiety bowl. But it's like, to me, like, another thing that's interesting is, like, you've got Ole Miss going to South Carolina. Ole Miss gets exposed last week. But, like, that's the question. It's like, did they get exposed as fraudulent? Or did they have a bad day? And are they going to come out and realize, like, we're kind of in college football. We need to remember it's more like the NFL now, where it's kind of going to be week to week. But then on top of that, let's say, hey, maybe the problem is Quinshon Judkins is running the football for Ohio State and they can't get the running game going because they don't have their NFL back. I mean, Ole Miss at 2 losses is now basically going to be everything that they came in building for, you know, this whole playoffs, like, this was the playoff run. Like, that's out the window right now. And what does that team look like? And by the way, if that does happen, the Kiffin to Florida noise is only going to get louder and louder and louder, because
is it now, already happening? Because I was listening to
it's so it's I would say right now it's an internet thing right now. It's not, to me, it's still kind of in the corners of the internet.
I was trying to, yeah, because I was listening to, I think it was the Bet the Board podcast, you know, betting podcast, and they were just, they had referenced it a number of times that the rumors had started. And I'm like, I would tend to lean on you more so than me on what's being rumored about. But man, that's,
I mean, the problem is they still haven't fired Napier.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think people think I'm crazy when I'm saying this, but like, they would prefer to not have to spend $26 million and fire him. Now, I don't think the team's good enough. Like, I think in the end, like, it's the story writes itself. But then there's also the question, does Scott Strickland get to make the next hire? That'd be two football hires that he failed at. Although, maybe in hindsight, hey, how's Mullen looking right now?
He's just tweeting away, baby.
That is a guy that's super happy. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk some of these SEC games and more of college football. We'll do it next with Blake Topmeyer. Stick around. You'll listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. He's also still the host of SEC Football Unfiltered. Episodes available each and every week on all major podcast platforms. He's on Twitter, on X, at B Topmeyer. Blake, are we in store for the classic, this looks sleepy, but we're going to wake up, or we're gonna look up at Saturday night and realize, like, okay, that's what this sport does. Like, whenever you think you've got it pegged, it just flips it. It flips it on your head.
Yeah, I don't know that we're going to see like the shocking upset, but I think it really could be a day of some delicious games that we're kind of overlooking. I mean, you start in the morning window with Missouri and Texas A&M. I think that's going to be a good game. It's going to be a really consequential game. Like, we're going to learn Saturday morning, is Missouri contender or pretender? I know everyone's waiting for some drama in Auburn and Georgia, and like, betting wise, that's an awful lot of points that Georgia has to cover there. I would probably take Auburn in the points, but I don't know that that's a game that comes down to the wire. But I look at another game in that time slot, Ole Miss going to South Carolina. I mean, with what we saw from Ole Miss's offensive line last week against Kentucky, and knowing the strength of South Carolina, is their defensive front, and how much trouble South Carolina gave LSU earlier this year. That's one that stands out as maybe being a potential upset alert. And then I look at the night window and that very late night game with Miami traveling cross country to Cal. Miami's fortunate to still be sitting here undefeated on that controversial call last Friday. Now, you know, they're going up against a Cal team that's had a pretty good defense. I don't know if they go down out there, but I think there's the potential for an upset in that one. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the big one that I don't think is going to happen is, like, Georgia losing again. They're at home. Auburn's looked a mess for weeks. That game, like I said, I think it'll be closer than the spread, but I don't see that one being the defining moment of Saturday. But I think there are some opportunities for some upsets elsewhere.
So let's look big picture here, fellas, because I came away from the Georgia game last weekend. You know, kudos to Alabama. They get the win. Ryan Williams is a freak of nature. But I came away with that second half being kind of impressed by Georgia, and to think that as poorly as they played, they still were winning that game in the fourth quarter. So I bet Georgia to win the title this week at plus 650. I'm curious, and Blake, I'll start with you. I'm curious what your thoughts are on Georgia moving forward, because in the eyes of odds makers, they're still the number one power rated team in the country. They have to go to Texas. They have to take on Tennessee. They have to go to Ole Miss. The schedule's challenging, but with the expanded playoff, with this roster, I mean, I don't think anyone's writing them off, but I just feel like with the fourth now shortest odds, I think now is kind of the time to strike on Georgia if you think they have the capabilities to win the title.
Yeah, I mean, I think odds-wise, there's arguments in that favor. I think the issue is seven out of the last eight quarters, Georgia's offense has not looked good. And so now it's to the point where it's a pattern. The offense looked great in the fourth quarter when it was mad dash rally mode, but the seven quarters previously to that, they didn't look good. And, you know, Carson Beck threw three interceptions in that game. He nearly threw about six or seven interceptions in that game. And if Alabama picks off a couple of those passes, that it was right there on, you know, I think the game's more lopsided than it is. So, I mean, we did start to see glimpses, you know, in the fourth quarter of what Georgia could be. But I guess my thing with them is, like, what's the real Georgia? Is it the team that we saw the seven quarters before that? Or is it the team we saw in the fourth quarter? Like, Georgia's offensive line is not playing to the level we've come to expect from them. Mike Bobo has either no trust in his run game or just has forgotten the run game exists. And, you know, I know they fell behind early against Alabama, but there was still a lot of time left in that game. They really went away from the run. They couldn't run the ball against Kentucky either, so it's becoming a pattern now. We've seen this with Bobo before. They're last in the conference in rushing attempts. And, you know, until the end of that game, I think Georgia's receivers struggled to gain separation from Alabama's DB. So, I mean, I think there are lingering concerns at this point about Georgia's offense. However, I mean, it still is a game of talent assembly, and when you look at the most talented rosters across the country, there's not really much doubt that Georgia has one of the three or four most talented rosters in the country. But, I mean, I like Texas in that game a few weeks from now, and if they lose that one, the trouble is that gives them no margin for error. I mean, if they were to lose close games to Texas and Tennessee, let's say, I still think most people would believe Georgia is one of the 12 best teams in the country, but I don't know that 9-3 gets them into the playoff. It sort of depends on what happens elsewhere. I know Greg Sankey would be making his Sesame Street argument at that point, but you know, if you got a lot of other teams lined up at 10-2 or 11-2, and Georgia's hoping to get in with 9-3, I think it could be on the outside looking in.
The thing that I struggled with, and you were there in person, so I couldn't tell how much of it was, like, if you were just watching, I think you thought Carson Beck was freaking out. And the moment was, like, too big. But, like, when I watched some of it, I think the receivers kind of screwed up a lot. Like, there were one of those picks, I think they were trying to run a screen, and the receiver just took off, like, on a go route. And so it looked like he threw it right to him. Like, the last play of the game, like, the receiver should just come back to the football. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he was just come right back to the football. So I kind of struggled with that, but I think it also kind of speaks to what you're talking about. They don't feel fully formed on offense.
Right. They don't. And I think to your point on Beck, like, Beck was not good. His receivers were worse. Yeah, I didn't think Carson Beck had a good game, but I do think he got no help, which has been kind of consistent the last couple weeks for him. And it's really a pivot from, you know, last season, really the last several seasons, when Georgia's quarterbacks had the full complement of weaponry around them, and it just hasn't felt like Carson Beck's had that the past couple weeks. And we saw it the second half of the Clemson game. He had all the weapons working in that game, but we really haven't seen that since Clemson. So and then the other thing too is, like, did Alabama let off the gas? Yeah. I don't really think they did. Mentally, I do think it's kind of hard to play with the same edge, but I think Georgia more got into, like, grip it or rip it mode, and kind of high risk, high reward, and they were hitting on some deep strikes. And so, I mean, that's sort of what you see back to the wall in the fourth quarter there. But yeah, I just keep going back to 7 out of the last 8 quarters, it just hasn't looked good for Georgia on offense. So I still think the defense is good. I know Alabama, you know, lit them up pretty good throughout the first half, but I still think Georgia's defense is pretty solid. And I think Alabama just sort of shell-shocked him there. And that's as good as we've seen, as good of a half of football as we've seen Jalen Milroe play in his career, I think. And I've consistently said, I thought Milroe would accelerate his game playing for Kalen DeBoer. The transition from Nick Saban and Tommy Reese to Kalen DeBoer is just a godsend for Jalen Milroe, and we saw that in the first half. So, yeah, I'm not totally out on Georgia. I still lean on them making the playoff, and if they make the playoff, they can win the national championship. If they get to the playoff, they can win it all. I they're still on that list of teams for me that have enough talent to win the whole thing. And there's only like five or six teams on that list. They're on the list, which I think, to the point we made earlier, like, that's why the odds now look a little more favorable to Georgia. The problem is if they lose to Texas, they have no more margin for error, because I'm not convinced that they get in at 9-3, even though I know the SEC and Greg Sankey are going to make that argument. And they'll threaten to take their ball and go home and create their own playoff if they don't get the teams they want in the mix. I just think 9-3 with their best win, say, being at Ole Miss.
Clemson.
Well, weirdly, they're going to have to be Clemson fans.
They're huge Clemson fans, because Ole Miss and Missouri played every FCS and Jabroni FBS team out there. So I think Georgia testing themselves and absolutely pummeling a team that looks like they could very well win the ACC is really helping them in that sense. But I mentioned Ole Miss, and you mentioned this game. I would be much more inclined to bet on South Carolina if Ole Miss had won last week with LSU waiting in the wings. But, you know, Blake, what do we make of games 1-4? Ole Miss went 772, 655, 649, 607 in total yardage, and then to be held to 353 against Kentucky. And to be honest, you mentioned Georgia's offense sputtering. At least they found a way to win that game and didn't lose like Ole Miss did. So do you have overall concerns about this Ole Miss team, or is that going to be a blip at the end of the day?
Yeah, you make a good point with Clemson. Finishing up with that before getting on to Ole Miss. Yeah, Georgia needs Clemson to win the ACC to have hope of getting in at 9-3, I think. Clemson not winning the ACC would put Georgia in a tighter spot at 9-3. On to Ole Miss, I think it's lingering concerns. Games 1-4, there's been a lot of narrative of, well, did that cupcake schedule, you know, not put Ole Miss in position to be ready in week 5. I don't really know that I'd buy that, because we've seen a lot of good teams over the years play cupcakes in weeks one through three or 1-4. And then their first conference test, they go out and pummel the opponent. So I don't think they got beat because they were playing cupcakes early in the season. I think they got beat because their offensive line got exposed. And I know, Jeffrey, you were thinking about this all preseason.
Yeah.
Like, for everything that Ole Miss assembled, I know you were wondering throughout the whole preseason, like, is that offensive line actually good?
Yeah.
And it didn't look good against Kentucky. And that is the strength of Kentucky, right? Is we know their defensive front that's the backbone of that team. That really is.
Deion Walker is a freaking stud.
Yeah. That is the Kentucky team, is the defensive front. And I know we all reacted, to that Kentucky-South Carolina score. But you go back, and the more and more you look at that game, like there were some wonky things that allowed the score to be so lopsided there. Like Kentucky's defense really wasn't that bad in that blowout loss to South Carolina.
I think Carolina only had like 250 yards of offense.
Yeah, it was everything else that Kentucky was doing that contributed to the final score in that one. So pretty consistently, Kentucky's defense has been good, and we hadn't really seen, I think a litmus test yet for whether the Ole Miss offensive line is up to being a playoff team. And so that's the concern I would have for Ole Miss this week is, once again, it's what feels like could be a vulnerability for Ole Miss, their offensive line, going up against the other team's strength of South Carolina's defensive front. I think they're going to win this week, but I do think it's kind of a dangerous game. But looking long term, you know, you got Georgia on the schedule. If Georgia beats them, you know, sort of the strength of schedule debate we were having earlier, like I just don't think Ole Miss is going to have a lot of meat on the bone to make an overwhelming argument at 10-2, if they were even to get to that point. You know, that loss to Kentucky is just going to hang on Ole Miss like an anchor. And when it comes to Selection Sunday in December, if they're sitting there at 10-2, best win over what, say 8-4, 9-3 LSU maybe, and they got Kentucky clinging to them, weighing them down. I don't know. I mean, depends who else is on the bubble. Depends what else is out there. But I think that could leave Ole Miss vulnerable. I mean, they might need to run the table to feel really, really good about their playoff chances. I think they could get there at 10-2, but losses to Kentucky and Georgia and hanging your hat on, say, LSU and maybe Oklahoma, that could put them in a tight spot. And after seeing what we saw on Saturday, maybe this is just an overreaction, but I would even have some concern about them getting to 10-2 at this point.
Yeah, to me, that's like a real question. It's like, was Saturday a reveal or was it a day that didn't play well? And
right.
And I do think awesome. Like I do think what is true about the schedule that hurt them, they had not had any game pressure. And you saw some game pressure for them on Saturday and they didn't really rise to the occasion. And you know, like a play that gets left out of it, everyone focuses on the 4th-and-7, the throw to Brown.
Mm-hmm.
I think the key play was they had started to figure it out offensively. And Trey Harris, there was like a late RPO, and Dart flips it out to Harris late, and he gets kind of sandwiched because you could tell he really wasn't expecting the ball. He got sandwiched, coughed it up. Kentucky recovers. Now, they didn't turn it into points, but to me the key was they kept Ole Miss from getting points and kind of taking control of the game, and it allowed it to stay kind of in that same thing. And then Ole Miss was horrific on third down, and so they just allowed Kentucky to play keep away. I tend to think that it's a little bit of an overreaction. Like, I don't think the offensive line's great. I also think that I think it was a bad matchup. Kentucky did a great job of making sure Walker always had a one-on-one. And I think that's the type of loss that you could kind of fix some things of like, all right, here's some things. Change your combinations on the line, and you're like, all right, we're not letting one guy beat us again. So I'm curious about it.
Yeah, I don't think it's like, you know, a columnist's favorite word, fraud, right? Like,
yeah.
I didn't watch Ole Miss on Saturday and think these guys are a bunch of frauds. But I just think with the schedule being what it is, like, I don't think they're frauds. I think this is still like a 10-2, 9-3 team. I just don't know if they go 10-2 with let's say they get creamed by Georgia, or you know, lose by 17 points to Georgia, and they have the loss to Kentucky, and they're hanging everything on the wins against LSU and whoever else, Oklahoma, I guess, which Oklahoma might be sitting on 7-5 at that point. It's just going to leave them a little vulnerable. I'm not saying they're out at that point, but it depends who else is on the bubble. And so they really gave up their margin for error. Like when we were looking at this in the preseason, we thought like, who's going to make the playoffs? Okay, if you have an easy schedule, that's an advantage, right? We
yep.
were looking at Ole Miss as being the team that was maybe one of the best positioned for the playoff because the schedule was more favorable than most SEC teams. But where that theory crumbles is if you lose a game that we had like dead to rights marked in the win column, like a home game against Kentucky, you're not going to have the strength of schedule to push you over the hump as a bubble team. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think the game revealed that Ole Miss has, you know, a laundry list of problems and they're a trash team. It's just, I just don't know that they're going to have a lot of margin for error because they're not going to have the same strength of schedule that I think a couple other bubble teams might have. I mean, if it just depends who's on the bubble, right? Like, I think there's going to be this logjam of teams that are 11-2 or 10-2, and it just depends how your resume stacks up against them. Whereas, you know, if Ole Miss wouldn't have this this Kentucky loss weighing them down, I think they'd be in much better shape. But it's also the annual argument of, like, how does the committee look at it? Like, how much are they evaluating, like, good wins against bad losses?
Yeah,
that whole thing. And the problem with Ole Miss is, like, they could get to 10-2 without beating a team that's going to be in the playoff field, because if they beat LSU, I don't think LSU's getting in. And then they would have a loss to, like, a 7-5 Kentucky team. So they would have a couple good wins, but maybe no great wins. And then they would have a, you know, not a loss to the level of Notre Dame losing to Northern Illinois, but a still not good loss at home to Kentucky. And so I think they're still very much in the mix. I think they, like I said, they'd be vulnerable, though, at 10-2.
I think Saturday, to your point, I don't think Ole Miss is fraudulent, but what I do think Saturday proved to me, and I was kind of leaning this way anyway, the idea that they were going to be significantly better than last year, to me, that's false. Like, that team to me looked like basically the same team I saw last year. I would argue this. I think they're a little bit better on defense, but the problem is they can say what they want, and I know his mother was a pain in the ass, and he probably wasn't the world's greatest locker room guy either. They miss Quinshon Judkins so bad.
Absolutely. Absolutely they do. And I think you just tied it all up right there. Like, this is still a pretty good team, just like it was a pretty good team last year. But we were wondering in the preseason, like, as we filled out our list of these are the teams that can win the national championship, Ole Miss always felt like the sticking point for me. Like, do I draw the line above Ole Miss and say this is a team that could be a playoff team, but it's not a championship team? Or do I put them above the line and say not only are they a playoff team, they could be a national championship contender? And I think what Saturday revealed to me is this still could be a playoff team. I don't think it's a national championship team. And so, and in that way, it does show that, like, yeah, it's kind of, I mean, different players, some positions are better, some positions are worse, but at the end of the day, it might be a team that's just not that much better than last season, which is still a pretty good team, but it's not a team that's going to win a national championship.
When you look at the only game we have this week, Blake, with top 25 teams going head-to-head, I like Texas A&M in this spot. You mentioned Notre Dame. Notre Dame is massive Texas A&M fans in this spot to continue to win, and they need that win to continue to get better. What do we know about Missouri? Because this is a team that has 120th strength of schedule right now, very fortunate to beat Vanderbilt. They are coming off a bye. Like I said, I like A&M in this spot as long as they're starting Marcel Reed, which I think is going to be the case for the Aggies with Wegman dealing with that shoulder injury.
Sure.
What do you make? Yeah, exactly. What do you make of this spot, and what do you know? What are you strongly believing about Missouri? Because I think there's a lot of uncertainty with this team.
Yeah, there is a lot of uncertainty. And what I'm wondering about Missouri is, like, for a year and a half now, they consistently win ugly. You know, you think back to last season, they needed a 60-plus yard field goal by the thicker kicker to beat Kansas State. they had Florida beat, and Florida said, we don't win games anymore.
No, come on. No, here you go. Have it back.
Yeah, here it is.
No, we don't want to take that. Come on.
Yeah, Ohio State's entire team quits before the bowl game. And to Missouri's credit.
Oh, hold on. Don't say.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.